what's the subject for fun conversation today?
Let's talk about really big things. Dynamometers.
Good. Glad you elaborated on that one. I was a bit concerned for a second.
Because I think people have a perspective of dynamometers being 500 horsepower, maybe 2,000 horsepower, but something you can think that fits in a box that's 4 foot by 4 foot or 5 foot by 5 foot.
A scale to an engine rather than the huge size of some of them.
Yeah, because if you look at water break dynamometers, you'll have something that, like our brand, the Froude brand, on a high-speed dynamometer that absorbs thousands of horsepower. You look at it and it doesn't look like it'll absorb that much. It's fairly small in stature and size.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you get big, and when we say big, you know, over 5,000 horsepower and up, and everybody has their own impression of what is a large engine, let alone a large engine dynamometer.
So, yeah, I guess the large engines that I'd experienced before I came here was big earth mover engines. But maybe locomotive ships. Engines, but not anything larger than that. And yeah, so to see, to start talking about large engines and low speed work, and you get into some things like the marine applications, and the engines get seriously large.
Yeah, I think you got that right. I think most of the time that I've seen when we talk about large engine is more in the marine, the ship industry, where they're quite massive in size. In fact, short story, but I remember going to a large engine manufacturing facility. It was like living in a land of, like, you've been miniaturized when you walk next to the engine components. I mean, I walked a distance and I would estimate maybe 30 to 40 feet, and that was the length of the crankshaft for this particular engine they were building.
Yeah, that kind of puts into perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and again, this was a marine application, and they had, when they took me through the assembly process and the assembly line, and I got to the end of it, they showed me the finished product, which was quite a large engine, and to be honest with you, I can't remember exactly how large it was from a power perspective, but it had to be, you know, I would say well over a million newton meters of torque. They had pictures of this engine being hoisted into an aircraft carrier, a big port in the side of the aircraft carrier for a military application. What was cool about it is I was thinking all along that this was the propulsion engine. This large, massive engine was actually being used to turn a generator to provide power to the vessel, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Just from a standpoint of perspective.
Yeah, so if we're talking about large engines, then you can categorize it by physical size, by, I suppose, size of each cylinder, but perhaps through defining the power of a large engine may be a better way of looking at it for us.
It's not just the engine itself. Gearbox testing utilize this because obviously it's a multiplication of torque, and some of them, the large ones, spin at a very low speed. So you may be testing the gearbox. You may be providing that load to the gearbox to make sure that the gearbox is functioning correctly, and it may be a durability type test and maybe doing a development test. Who knows? But the magnitudes of size is extreme when it comes to some of this equipment. I mean, you don't normally see test cells with dynamometers this size.
Well, yeah, it'd be difficult to actually set one up unless it's next to for a hydraulic version, next to a lake or a on the coast, really.
Yeah, very, very good point. One in particular that I went to go see, actually when I first hired on Froude, is there was one of our larger dynamometers on site on the West Coast. But when you typically do maintenance, you're talking about maybe using a borescope and sticking it into the cavity of the dynamometer in between the stator and the rotor, and putting it in places to investigate what the condition is on the inside of the dynamometer that you can't see visually without tools. This dynamometer, I was able to go inside of it, walk inside of the dynamometer carcass and look up and see the various components and visually see that from a standpoint of magnitude and the orders of magnitude. It was just incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, I'm sure that was quite a sight to going with your hammer and chisel to clean things up. It's quite a different proposition, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You talk about the hubs that go on the end of a dynamometer. Typical dynamometer may be anywhere from 8 inches to 16 inches. This was approximately 8 feet in diameter. So the coupling that attached to it was another 8-foot diameter coupling that attached to the end of this dynamometer. Top speed, maybe 200 RPM. Really slow, really high torque.
No, that's a good introduction to the size of the machines looking at here. But we're looking at these four engines over what? Over 5,000 kilowatts?
Yeah, over 5,000 kilowatts. I mean, we're talking, when we talk large engines, we're talking megawatts now, right?
Yeah.
You're talking really big. And if you go online, you can always search for largest engine in the world, and you can get a perspective of the dyno that attaches to that, what it would look like. Because most engines are tested by a dynamometer in one way, shape, or form to prove its performance and durability to one extent. So even the large ones, we have a way of testing that at Froude, and we've produced them, but they're very rare.
Yeah, I guess actually just producing them involves quite a few changes to the typical facility. I mean, handle the weight is one thing, but the physical size of this, put that in perspective, most of these brakes are hydraulic dynos, and the rotor inside of these machines can be up to, what, 3 meters in diameter?
Yeah, easy.
A smaller engine dyno has a rotor of you know, a meter or half a meter. Mm-hmm. And these are 3 meters in diameter. So you've got a huge rotor we've got to swing around.
Yeah. And the weight, right?
Yeah.
The weight of these is just incredible.
So everything's sort of scaled up physically. But I guess the principle of operation is still the same.
Yeah, it is. I think it's some of the things you have to consider differently when you get to that size. And it may be just how you measure the load.
Yeah.
And there's different ways of doing it. And whether this is a floated dyno on a trunnion, or it's a fixed mount, or if it sits on a pad and those pads have load cells underneath them, like some of our large engine dynos do, to measure the reactionary force dyno spins.
I guess the weight of these dynos would make a trunnion system more difficult. I mean, just the physical capability of having a trunnion that would move would be a challenge. So I can see the advantage of the load cells on the feet. You can still look at the reaction torque from that and work out what the power is being transferred. But in terms of design features, where else would you look at there being differences, apart from, as you say, the physical scale of it and therefore the challenges of building it?
I think part of it has to do with, when you're building something that large, you definitely have to consider what are the utility requirements in this design to make this thing work to its full potential or meet its performance curve. And being a water breaker hydraulic dynamometer, the water supply is, again, another incredibly large number in regards to volume of water that needs to be pumped through this dynamometer. I think you mentioned earlier in this conversation about being close to the water or close to the ocean or a big body of water. And a lot of the times, the municipalities don't have enough water that you could provide to spin or load a dynamometer like this. So you have to be next to a body of water to be able to suck that water in. And a lot of the design goes into that being a saltwater application. So typically our dynos don't run with salt water, but when you get this large, sometimes the only water they have close is salt water, one of the design considerations. So some components have to be stainless and corrosion resistant.
Yeah, some parts are sealed away from the water, but it's still going to be there for the life of these machines. You need something to protect it.
Right. Right. And the other thing, too, that when you think about it is most of the applications, they don't normally run continuous. They'll run them for a period of time, and then they'll sit idle for a length of time, maybe months, if not a year, and then fire it back up again. Because, like I said, it's not that they're producing 10 large engines every day. It's far and few in between. It's a major, major project.
Pretty specialized in that respect.
Yeah.
What about the water valves for these to control such a big dyno? It's the same principle of valve.
It is. It's just more of them.
Yeah.
So it's not just one large valve. It's two or three large valves that
again,
are in the
circuit. With stainless steel, because they'll need to be protected.
Yep.
So it's the same looking valve, but bigger.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, it's back to what you said earlier, the theory of operation or principles of operation and design.
So what limits the speed of these low-speed ones then? Part of it is obviously being matched to the torque of the engine. But I guess there are other physical limitations as well.
Well, it's the mass. It's spinning that large of a mass. It's only designed to handle so much rotor tip speed with something of that mass and magnitude, because the imbalance properties, if you get something so large, you're only going to spin it so fast, right? So large engines don't need to spin or don't spin that fast. So you're not going to design something that size to run at 8,000 RPM. I can only imagine seeing something that large.
The energy contained there would be scary. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be anywhere near that site.
And what's the biggest machine you've seen?
So the biggest one I've seen was on the West Coast, and that was...
U.S. or England?
U.S.
Okay.
And that was 2 million newton meters of torque.
Yeah.
So, and that was, and I think it's pretty close, if not the largest one that we produce. It was quite extraordinary to see for the first time.
Yeah, and the end result of this is a dyno which can be two house stories tall.
Easy, because
of the size of it. I've stood on the top of one at a test facility.
Yep.
Having gone up two flights of stairs to get on the top of it.
Yeah.
Big dyno.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with large engines before, not that large, but I've worked with engines that were clear over 8,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
And even those engines required scaffolding to service the engines themselves. So the dynamometer would be no different. It's typically pretty large in relationship to the large engine.
Yeah. Now, we've moved these out of the Worcester Froude facility before. But do you want to talk a little bit about the logistics of moving such machine on the road system?
Best way I can explain it is like moving a house.
Yeah.
You have to go through the same things. It has to go on a road. First of all, it's got to be in an environment or a road that can support the load or weight. It's not uncommon to move power lines, move things out of the way just to get this by. And there's certain areas it can go in, certain areas it can't go in as far as transportation-wise. So load-bearing roads, building, parking lots, all those things need to be considered. Utilities, it is a monumental thing. And again, I've seen house moving in the past on TV, which I thought was pretty cool, how they would lift a house off the ground, out of the ground, and move it a distance to another location and put it back down again.
Yeah.
It would be the same thing. In fact, I wouldn't doubt that the weight may even be heavier with the dyno than a full house.
Yeah, so it's dealing with the weight, but also the physical size of the thing and how to get it down the road.
Right.
I think in the case of moving this one out of Worcester, we had to take some of the wall down to actually take it out of the building.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me either if it would be shipped in pieces in some circumstances, possibly.
Yeah.
Because when you build a large engine dynamometer, how do you test the large engine dynamometer without having the customer product? You really can't. It's not feasible to say I'm gonna buy a large engine to test a large engine dynamometer or have the facilities to be able to equip it to do that. So the final testing grounds is at the customer site.
That's on the application, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Once we've got it to site and got it working, the question of maintenance comes up, and this isn't one we're going to be bringing back to do a repair, I imagine.
No, not typically. And with that one, you have to have serious hoist capabilities or crane capabilities if you're taking any major parts off this dynamometer.
Yeah.
And typically the environment they're in have it because they're working with things like that all the time, heavy pieces of machinery all the time. But sometimes it's easier to maintain the larger engine dynamometer for the perspective of you can visually get into every nook and cranny very easily just because of the space. But the other perspective of everything, the bearings, replacing bearings, everything is a more systematic, planned event, orchestrated, let's put it that way, with various trades in that facility to just change a set of bearings. It's not like you can take a fitter or a technician and with a set of wrenches or sockets and ratchets and go to town taking the bearing caps off and then removing the bearings off of it. It's more of a planned event that takes days, if not weeks sometimes.
Yeah. No, that's a good point in terms of how to handle these things. Maintenance is also not required as often. If you said the usage is not usually continuous, so it's going to be testing a particular ship engine and waiting for the next one to be built?
Yeah, yeah. And the maintenance would be more related to long-term storage maintenance than general maintenance on these particular items.
Yeah.
And some of them, by nature, will replace bearings on a certain interval, no matter how many hours on it. Because once they hook up a large engine to this dyno, it's a big event. So you want to make sure that everything's ready to go. And some of them, by nature, replace the bearings if it's down for any length of time.
So use your downtime as useful as possible.
Right.
And what about emissions, though, with these engines? I know that the when the ships are at sea, they typically aren't controlled by emissions regulations, but there are regulations for ships coming into port in a number of places now. So I suppose we've got to look at emissions testing on these big dinos as well.
There are, like you said, I think it's more so few and far in between, the emissions aspect of it, but it doesn't preclude it. Dynamometer still has to perform and have stable control no matter how big it is.
Yeah.
But the other thing, too, I think that I wanted to mention is, because I started thinking about it, is the build cycle for something like this. I know how long it takes to, most people can estimate that have bought dynamometers in the past of, you know, they can expect a lead time when they order a dynamometer dependent upon the size and the model of X number of weeks or even months. When you talk about building something of this magnitude, you're typically talking years. You're not going to pump it out in less than 12 months. It's not on the shelf.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be cast brand new and ground up. I haven't been through that cycle.
Yeah.
But I've studied the past and how we've done past large engine dynamometers, and it's not uncommon to have it go for the build go for a 2-year period of time or longer, depending upon what the requirements are.
Well, that's a good introduction to the LS Dyno. An obvious message is to get your order in early for one of these fine machines.
Very good advice, Chris. Very good advice.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Dyno Insights, presented by Froude. If there are any engine testing topics you'd like us to discuss, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at podcast@froudedyno.com.